We start with Dr. Paul Moffitt. He's a pediatrician specializing in infectious diseases, an expert on vaccines, immunology, and virology, but he also is a student of science and has written about it prolifically in Pandora's Lab. That's his book. It argues that science is a process, one of learning over time, and particularly of learning from one's failures. Good morning, Paul Moffitt.
Good morning.
Well, you believe that we've had some great advances in science. No one can deny that. But at the same time, some of the advances have been accompanied by colossal failures. What's the most prominent one? You name seven of them, but is there one that sticks out more than others?
I think the one that was the most upsetting, because I think it sort of has applications to what's going on now, is in 1916, so 100 years ago, there was a scientific treatise written. It was arguably the most popular scientific treatise ever written. It sold 1.6 million copies, and it was called The Passing of the Great Race. It was written by a New York City conservationist and lawyer named Madison Grant, and basically what he did was he took eugenics one step farther. So eugenics basically was the belief that not only physical traits, but other more different characteristics were passed from one family member to another, like loyalty or bravery or drunkenness. He took it to the next step, saying that this was a phenomenon of race, that his race, what he called the Nordic race, was being diluted out by inferior races that were coming in from Eastern Europe or Poland or Italy and Armenians and Jews, and this was somehow lessening America, that we needed to make America America again, as he said. And so that led to a series of four very restrictive immigration laws. It led to discussions about building a Great Wall, as they said at the time, in the 1920s. In 1925, that book was translated into German, where it was read by a young German corporal who was imprisoned in Landsberg, who wrote a letter to Madison Grant saying, quote, "This book is my Bible." He then took whole sections of Madison Grant's book, and basically plagiarized it into his book, which, you know, literally translated to "My Struggle" or "Mein Kampf." And Hitler, when he came to power in the 1930s, made The Passing of the Great Race, now translated into German, required reading for young German citizens, and then race purity met its illogical, hideous end.
Well, unintended consequences, I would imagine, though.
Well, I mean, I think that when you make false promises or have false beliefs, as Madison Grant did, that one can separate human beings into the different qualities of human beings based on their racial background or ethnic background or religious background, that was a false promise, and obviously had a hideous end.
Well, you note, Paul, that in 1909, a German scientist invented a chemical reaction that won the Nobel Prize, allowing us to grow more crops to feed more than 7 billion people across the globe. But unless we do something about it, it could end life on this planet as well.
Right. So there was a Fritz Haber, his name was. He was a German chemist. And he discovered at the time what was considered to be the holy grail of chemistry, which was to try and get depleting nitrogen stores. Nitrogen only comes from soil. I mean, the other major parts of our body, you know, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, we can get from water and from air. So it was not, that wasn't a problem. But, you know, this was a problem. Nitrogen only came from soil. And so really, if you farmed every arable inch of land on the planet, you could feed about 4 billion people. In fact, we feed more than 7 billion, and the reason is him. I mean, more than half of the nitrogen in our body comes from Fritz Haber's process, which was taking nitrogen from the air and being able to put it into a form, i.e. synthetic fertilizers, that we could use to grow crops, and which then feeds animals, etc. The problem, the price we pay, and invariably with scientific advances, there's always some price, and the price here is nitrogen overload, which is starting to, you know, choke off waterways and seas and making it very difficult for fish and for animals that feed on fish to live. That's been the problem, is one of nitrogen overload.
Well, in 1901, 8 years before this, another German scientist performed an experiment that revolutionized the food industry, giving rise to margarine and vegetable shortening, and there's certainly a downside to that.
Yes, that was mostly all downside, as it turns out. I mean, think in the 1970s was born the notion that fats, you should limit the amount of fats in your total calories to less than 30% of total calories, that increased fats was causing heart disease, specifically coronary artery disease. And sort of it drove us out of the arms of butter, which consists of animal fat, into the waiting arms of margarine, which was considered the heart-healthy alternative because it was made from partially hydrogenated vegetable oils. Now, that was an unsaturated fat, which was considered the healthier fat rather than saturated fats. But that particular unsaturated fat was trans fats. And, you know, for all the discussions people can have about, you know, what is good or not good for you in your diets, trans fats have never been controversial. Trans fats are bad for you. They increase very low-density lipoprotein cholesterol, bad cholesterol. They decrease, you know, the good cholesterol, the high-density lipoprotein cholesterol, and they were responsible for causing about 250,000 heart-related deaths a year. So basically, we've banned trans fats from the American diet, thanks to the FDA. But it took us decades to figure that out.
The guest is scientist and physician Paul Offit. His book is Pandora's Lab. Your number, 877-217-5757. Let's go back 6,000 years ago and the discovery of the opium poppy. It was characterized as God's own medicine, and something happened along the way that proved otherwise. It was, at the time, though, thought to be a panacea for much of everything.
Yeah, still is at some level. I think, you know, that plant, the opium poppy, has probably caused more pleasure and more pain than any other plant in history, or more suffering anyway. So opium, you know, is a phenomenal euphoric agent, and it's a pain reliever. And it wasn't until about maybe 2,500 years ago, around the time of Hippocrates, that the realization was where the Greeks were becoming addicted to opium. So opium users became opium addicts. And then the thinking was, okay, let's just purify the main ingredient of opium, which is morphine. And that way, because it's pure, it will be less addictive, and so opium addicts became morphine addicts. Then the thinking was, okay, let's use everything we know about chemistry to make a product that causes this morphine to enter the blood brain, to cross the blood brain barrier much more quickly. We'll diacetylate morphine. It was made by a German company called Bayer, and they named it for its heroic properties, calling it heroin, which was then available over the counter for about 30 years till people realized that it too was addictive and that morphine addicts had just become heroin addicts. Then what we did was we went back to opium, took out a chemical called thebaine, and then modified that chemically to become oxycodone. In the 1990s, you know, there were prominent specialists, pain specialists, who said, we have to get over our fear of opiates and opioids. We need to get over what he called opiophobia, that we should make the pain the fifth vital sign, not let anybody suffer. And so now we've essentially enslaved a nation. As you know, I think the critical moment came when more people started dying of opioid and painkiller addictions than died from motor vehicle accidents. We've enslaved a nation with opioids.
More recently, as in 51 years ago, with the power of two Nobel Prizes behind him, an American chemist proclaimed megavitamins a panacea and kickstarted a multi-billion-dollar unregulated industry that, Paul, you say has not lived up to the promise and, in fact, has caused disease and death.
Yeah, that was a surprise for me also. I mean, Linus Pauling was the winner of two Nobel Prizes. He won a Nobel Prize in chemistry, a Nobel Prize for peace. I mean, he was a brilliant man. He was a genius. But he came to have a false belief, which is that megavitamins, meaning vitamins taken vastly in excess of the recommended daily allowance, so I'm not talking about multivitamins, but megavitamins, that they could make you live longer, that they would prevent cancer, that they would treat colds or prevent colds, and that was wrong. I mean, study after study showed that was wrong. I think what we're finding out now, which I think was a surprise to me in writing this book, is that megavitamins can actually increase your risk of cancer, increase your risk of heart disease, and so shorten your life. And I think were this a regulated industry, meaning if the FDA could regulate this industry, I honestly think some of these megavitamins would have black box warnings on them. I think there is no doubt that taking large quantities of vitamin E increases your risk of prostate cancer. And I think people don't know that because this is an unregulated industry.
Well, it is a book that has relevance to today, Pandora's Lab, about some scientific hits and misses. But it has, I'm sure, relevance to some other controversies. And a listener asks about vaccinations. There's much conjecture about whether they're good or bad.
Yeah, not sure why. I mean, there's certainly ample evidence to show that vaccines are what they're claimed to be, which is to say safe and effective. But you're right. I mean, if you go onto the internet, you can certainly find people who will claim that they cause anything from autism to diabetes to multiple sclerosis, and that's just not true. I think, you know, we're subject to that. We're subject to a lot of fake bad news, which I think causes us to make bad health decisions that can have bad outcomes. And certainly the choice to withhold or separate vaccines or space them out or not give them to your children mm-hmm. has been a choice of, which has caused those children to suffer.
We only have about 30 seconds, Paul, but another listener asks about e-cigarettes.
Yeah, you know, I think we don't know about e-cigarettes yet. I mean, certainly there seems to be an inverse correlation between the use of e-cigarettes and the incidence of lung cancer, so I guess time will tell on e-cigarettes.
The guest is Paul Offit. We thank you for joining us today. It's certainly a significant book about science and about what can go wrong and right. Pandora's Lab is the book, and we thank you for joining us, Dr. Offit.
Thank you, Jim.